welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McClower. Tonight we have a very interesting, and I hope a great show, dealing with the general ideas of spirituality and metaphysics. Some science and physics always, I usually incorporate ideas from that side of my, we'll say, experiences. Also, I thought tonight we would deal with some practical sides to questions that are kind of floating around these days here in the United States. For those of you who are in this country, in the United States, you know what I'm talking about. But for others who may be listening in other countries, maybe your particular system of economy might be considerably different from the one that we try to creatively pursue here in this country. So you can, if you want, add your 2 cents worth, or you can listen and be thoughtful. If you are wanting to, you can call in and listen to the show on this number, 712-432-0075. For those of you who would prefer to do that, because then you can walk around and listen instead of being necessarily at a computer. Now, let me talk about what today's show is actually about. I thought this was a kind of interesting play on words. I hope you do, too. Today's show is God, Free Enterprise, and Entrepreneurial Spirit. Now, you might say, whoa, you're talking about that word free and spirit, and haven't you talked about that having something to do with God? And so I said, sure, yeah, that's right. That's what we're going to do in today's show, is to talk about how these all fit together. And they really have a great deal of meaning in terms of what I consider to be a way of getting closer to our Creator. The show's name is Why Life Is, but we try to answer that in every show. And there are so many different answers to that, because life is a creative process. It's a process of growth, not just of the life itself, but also of the Creator who created the life. So ultimately, we need to look at this as a kind of process of shared co-creation, and I use that word a lot. And we shouldn't be looking at it as God being a being that never changes. A lot of people prefer that. And some religions are somewhat insinuating, or sometimes just out and out saying that. I'm saying something different. Now, you don't have to agree with what I'm thinking or saying, but for the sake of the show, I'm going to express it anyway, and that is that, in my opinion, the Creator, or God, whichever word you're familiar with or you prefer, is a being who chose to create life, not because it had to, because it wanted to. Because it saw life as a means for its own further development by giving up, sacrificing a great deal for life. Part of that sacrifice was that to give life free will and freedom, it had to restrict some of its own spiritual message and its own expression. It did this in a kind of interesting way. Its thought, which I call the spirit of God, is not pervasive in our natural state. It is all around us, and if we co-create with it by being virtuous ourselves, we find it all the time. However, we are not forced. We are not even pushed or moved to necessarily do so. It's an amazing process of real freedom. Real freedom means that the cards aren't stacked, the dice aren't stacked, at least as far as our ability to choose what to do in our lives. Some people choose poorly. If they choose poorly, the results eventually don't work out very well for them. Now, you might say, well, how do you know that to be true? And the answer is, once you get involved in the system of co-creation or being virtuous in your life, and living a life that puts you as part of the co-creation with the Creator. The Creator is completely revealed, and you can see it. If you don't choose to do that in a deliberate sense, you're always going to ask the same question, how do you know? And there's no answer until you try it. And once you try it, you won't need to ask the question any longer. So it's an interesting thought problem. And I leave it for those who want to experiment with it to see whether or not it's true. There is no answer, though, for those who want it to be proven to them outside of them finding God for themselves. And that's an unfortunate part of this whole freedom thing. In order for there to be freedom, you can't have the concept, at least, of God introducing itself and saying, "Hi, I'm God, and this is a message so that you'll believe in me and in yourself, ultimately." So God says, well, no, you develop yourself until you find God through co-creation, if that's what you choose to do. Interesting, quite different from the concepts of some people's religious views. That's okay. All right. I don't need to have to be always in step with any specific viewpoint. What I do want to say is what makes sense both to me and to, we'll say, a whole bunch of philosophical and religious viewpoints other than the ones that disagree, that do agree, and that come to the same conclusions that I have already presented. So God wants us to be free so we can create. We can be a co-creator. And part of that creation is more than just some charitable act. I know that a lot of people think first of charity when they consider the word God. To me, charity comes much later than the original acts of creation. The reason it does is because charity is for those who have failed at creation in some way, and they need the charity. You can also say God's grace is the same as charity. For those who, unfortunately, have failed so many times that without some kind of help from the outside, they may not be able to turn things around, at least with any reasonable level of success. That seems completely consistent to me about what God is. So it makes sense that charity should exist. But it doesn't come first, because first there is the opportunity to be creative. And some people are more capable of exercising that opportunity than others, particularly those that have created virtue or good things in whatever they've done, or at least in some things that they've done. The results are oftentimes a widening and increasing in their ability to be more creative in the future. Interesting point, and you know I've talked about darkness and evil being different than darkness, but people who take a darker path of the light of God, or purely evil people, which is really a much more significant and serious issue, those people may create. Now, what they can create is destruction, and the ultimate destruction they create will come back on themselves. Since they're only creating not to co-create with God, but to gain something for themselves, what they ultimately gain, since they're creating destruction, is to destroy themselves, if you understand the logic of what I just said. And they don't destroy, this is the oddest thing about it, they don't destroy just their physical or some emotional element inside themselves or whatever, or the mental mind. They actually first destroy their ability to be creative. So the safeguard of this process, and you could say, well, God planned it that way. That's okay with me. I don't mind that. is that those that fall into the realm of creating against God and are not co-creators, therefore, ultimately lose the ability, but over a very, very slow process. And it's so slow that we, human beings, seldom notice it until it's accumulated to a very far level. And so sometimes we think that evil doesn't get its just desserts, but it does. And sometimes we think people who are living a darker kind of life don't eventually suffer some consequences from that, but they do. It's just that our ability to see that span of time and consequences is greater than our own consciousness might be. The needed ability is greater, and our ability to do it is therefore less. I said that kind of backwards, excuse me. And so, ultimately, it is very difficult for some people to notice that that's really happening, and so they may think there is no such thing as a God because they just happen to not notice. The people who are pursuing these darker avenues don't eventually pay in an enormous way for that. Now, the payment isn't like some punishment. It's what I call karma. It's just an effect from the causes they're doing in trying to create against the great of all great beings, God. And when you try to do something against God in its way of thought, you're going to end up with a big mess. And that's what they end up with. It's not because anybody's doing some kind of punishment trip. I know that a lot of people think that, and again, that's kind of in some religions. But I think that it isn't necessary, and I don't find that God is a wasteful being. Why do something unnecessary when people can do it to themselves? Just let it happen, and that's what happens. Besides which, God, being a free, loving being, doesn't necessarily run into a interference cycle in trying to punish other people for what they've done. Now, I know about the Yahweh of the Bible, the Old Testament, supposedly punishing some folks. And so that was possibly, maybe that was God, you know, 3,000, 4,000 years ago. It's possible. And before that was the other types of writings that support the same kind of concepts, but maybe God has evolved, or maybe God was like that. But I think God was like that, and maybe people interpreted wrongly the results. Getting back to this question of free enterprise, though, and free entrepreneurial spirit. Free enterprise is the ability for the third part of our Creator's mind, of God's mind, to become active in a way that causes the growth of God. Why do I say that? Well, the first two parts of God's mind is God's thought. Thought is composed of the first part, which, as you know, I've suggested that it's freedom, creation, purpose, lots of words, sacrifice even. And that's combined with love, the second part, the love, consciousness, understanding, giving, and planning. All of those put together make thought. Thought is more than just creation. It requires there being a direction to the thought for it to be real thought, a direction to the creation. So everything we create in our minds needs to have some direction to it, or it's not real thought. Direction means that we're limiting what we're thinking about to a specific point, direction. And it means that we're thinking in ways that does involve planning and does involve some of the other things I mentioned. So this is a basic understanding. Of course, many people have heard this before because I've been doing this for a while, getting on to 7 years now. And for the people who have listened in or read some of the books, et cetera, they got they got some understanding of what my understandings are. And again, these go back into antiquity. They're not something that's just something I came up with. Okay, so the third part of God's mind has to do with interaction of life itself. In order for there to be growth of God at a rate that it decided would be good, it didn't just create one life form. It created zillions, countless life forms. And those life forms, when they reach close to or at or above human beings, those life forms are highly interactive in a lot of different ways. The interaction is what exponentially causes growth in a great way. Now, a lot of people say, well, some of the interaction is survival of the fittest, and isn't that all about, you know, some kind of thing dealing with Darwinian evolution or something. That's part. Science is part, and Darwinian evolution is part of science, biology. But it is only for those that don't do much creative thinking, those kinds of creatures that don't. The more a creature does, and the greater, or it's more like a human being, the more it gets closer to human beings in its thought, the less it's controlled by some of the evolutionary issues. And human beings are not so controlled unless they act like animals themselves. Because we have a sense of God, unlike animals. And that makes us very different. Very different. We can directly sense God, which is why we constantly seek to understand God, and animals don't. They may love, they may give and be virtuous in some ways that resemble some of the love people have, but they don't love God. They don't understand God. They don't worship or have faith in God because they don't have a sense of it. We're given two great senses that help us understand God right from the get-go, and it's universal in human beings. Not every human being may have those senses, but all human beings can. Some human beings may be deficient in them because they've created destruction in themselves, but they can regain over time those senses. All right, so the third part of God's mind is there to exponentially grow God through the interaction of all the forms connected with the spirit of life. Forms are necessary for there to be interaction on any level other than thought. And so spirit has to join with form, make a life form, that then can interact. And that exponentially causes life to grow. It can cause virtue to grow and light in the world to grow. Or it cannot, depending upon what the choices are of life itself. Enterprises, when you have free enterprise, it allows people to exchange things, including some types of intellectual property, which is not quite a thing, but it's the potential for a thing, between themselves. Enterprise is critical because it helps to develop God, but it has to be free enterprise or it develops darkness. Oh, some of you have heard me say that socialism generally goes dark. And communism is always dark because there's no freedom in enterprise. The enterprise is decided by a few select people who usually are power hungry, and they usually run things like the government and police and other things like that. And they force people to engage in enterprise based upon preconceived and predetermined values and methods, including things like prices, and who does what when, and who can make what when, and that kind of thing. That's dark. That's not part of God. God decided that there shall be free interaction. just as there's freedom in thought. All three parts of God shall be free. And free enterprise is a very important part of building a society that is enlightened. Now, it's virtue in its actions. Very important. Now, I know some people listen to me, and they are socialists. I've talked to a couple of them in time, or a few of them from time to time. And I'll tell you, socialism is kind of a false utopia. It is based upon the idea that people know better than God. Since if you listen to me and you believe what I say, or if you read my books, and some people read my books and they're socialists, it doesn't make any sense to me. And they tell me how wonderful the book is, or books. I don't get it, but okay. Think of it this way. Think of it this way. If what I've written, and some people claim it to be the most profound stuff they've ever read and whatever, look at if it floats your boat, that's all that matters. That's good. I don't need to hear that it's the most profound, right? But I do want to kind of encourage people to think about this in these terms. If God seeks us to be free so that we can co-create with it and not just be puppets in some kind of ridiculous show, then the idea of human beings determining the rights of people, the way people shall exchange and interact about things, and the way they shall interact about ideas, and what shall be taught to them, even worse, or what news or what kinds of information they can either speak or hear. If those are the kinds of things, I'm talking about both socialism here and getting into communism, if those are the kinds of things that a person believes, they can't possibly believe in the kind of God that I have described in much more detail than in this show tonight, of course. And so the answer to why life is would be so that some human beings can abuse and control and affect the lives of a vast number of others. And not just other human beings, but other life in general. It's a kind of ridiculous state of arrogance. And some people who are into this utopian idea, instead of free enterprise, they say, well, why don't we just make it so everybody gets all the things they need or want? And then that will solve the problem. But you see, the problem was never that people get what they need or want. The problem was that they learn how to freely co-create together and give to others what they need. And what they need is to be co-creators themselves with God, not to become welfare people or in some other way controlled and taken care of in some super parental fashion. That's not God's plan, you see. Free enterprise is the hallmark of, we'll say, enlightened and godly interaction. Free enterprise leads to beauty in form, a very great virtue, by the way. When something becomes beautiful in form, it allows others to improve their senses, including their sense of God. So beauty is a wonderful thing. When you don't have free enterprise, societies become very ugly because the foundations of the basis of creation is based upon greed and power and control. Now, I know people say, wait a second, why are you just one of these monopolistic capitalists? You notice I'm not using the word capitalism per se. I believe capitalism works as long as there is free enterprise. But capitalism can go wrong as well through monopolies. So a free enterprise system has to guarantee that people have the equal potential to be creative. Not that they are going to be given everything, nor is it going to be made true that whatever they create is always going to get them back the same as things that others get. It's just that they have the opportunity to be creative. And interestingly, that capitalism does give you, provided there is not a monopoly. Monopolies should be outlawed and probably restricted better than they are here in the United States. But that's the only kind of regulation you really need. Everything else almost takes care of itself if you truly have free enterprise. I said almost. There's a few things that don't. It's pretty hard to get certain kinds of wide public works done based just on free enterprise. You can hire people based upon a bidding system, and those people could be independent and private in their building of roads or hospitals or some other things that might be public in some respect. But ultimately, nobody's going to build a six-lane highway system, three in each direction, that costs billions of dollars. Just because they want to be creative and enter into free enterprise. It needs to be profitable over a period of time. And unfortunately, in some circumstances, that period of time is longer than there's anybody around to try to do it. So toll roads don't always work for the common good. And for that reason, we decide as a society to make some things on an enterprise basis governmental. The same is true, by the way, of military defense and sometimes things like police and fire departments. The free enterprise system only goes so far with those kinds of, we'll say, jointly involved in services where everybody or most people have some vested interest in it. Then we use the taxation system. But beyond those things, free enterprise needs to be the system that is employed. Because if it isn't, it eventually becomes dark and even ugly and destructive. Now, I know about some countries, usually they are small, that have limited forms of socialism. Some of the Scandinavian countries do in Europe. There's some other countries that enjoy the similar kinds of things. Usually they're even smaller than those Scandinavian countries. But one of the things, if when you go and check out how things are going there, it's true fewer people have as many needs or wants for the very basic things in life. But the most creative parts of people's lives are stifled. And the amount that people ultimately have in prosperity is reduced. So I guess you can say, well, those folks are choosing certain degrees of security because of fears of life over growth. And, of course, that's okay for them to choose that. The problem is that given enough time, the system will eventually grind to a halt. It may take hundreds of years, but eventually it will grind to a halt. In the interim, it may seem like it's even working okay. But I will tell you that if you don't have free enterprise, the future is bleak. The future may be, in terms of hundreds of years, but it's still going to be bleak. So God and free enterprise go hand in hand. Now, I know some people are going to be pretty upset with that. I'll probably get some emails. But, you know, it's okay if you want to believe in the utopian idea that everybody's going to be taken care of and there'll be something called social justice. It's okay if that's what you think or you imagine. But why not open your mind and heart to this other idea of free enterprise and recognize that we're here not to necessarily just make it by and be safe and secure. But we came here with the idea of high risk. We came here because we as souls who couldn't come decided to create human beings who came. Because this is a world, by taking the risk, you can lose your way. The danger isn't in not having enough food or shelter or clothing or other niceties. The danger is in losing connection with your soul and God. And that danger is the most real part of this whole experience. Free enterprise can help people to become closer to their soul. But you've got to have the next part of today's show. You need entrepreneurial spirit. What's the difference between free enterprise and entrepreneurial spirit? Well, spirit, we already know, is the first two parts of God's mind. That means part of the reason you're involved in free enterprise is because you want to co-create with God. You don't want your creation to be something that's a monstrosity or that rips people off or toxifies the planet or destroys your employees or makes you in some way some kind of Mr. Hyde person. You don't need that. You don't want that. So that's the spirit part. But what is entrepreneurial? Entrepreneurial means that when you create in your enterprise, you also create something new in yourself. It means that what you're making is part of you. It's an expression of who and what you are, not just a thing. You see? Ah. Okay. So God is a free enterprise and entrepreneurial spirit, meaning, of course, it's a play on words, I realize that, meaning the thought that you're using to express yourself in the business, or express yourself in the creative effort, or express yourself in the exchange of ideas that have some form, outcome, making this very general, is an expression of who you are as a soul and a human together. And it's expressing it to other people so that they can do the same, not so they're prevented from doing it. That's why monopolies are so evil. Because in a monopolistic exchange of enterprise, which would be non-free enterprise, you'll be preventing others from enjoying what you're trying to do yourself. Even if you're being creative and an expression of yourself, if it's to prevent others from being free, it's dark and it's wrong. And it isn't free enterprise. It is enterprise, but it's not free enterprise. Free enterprise means that both those that are creating and those who are receiving some elements of that creation are increased in their ability to do the same in return on any kind of exchange level. So you're not only a producer, but you're a consumer, and vice versa, and it goes back and forth. very interesting stuff. I hope. I hope this is making some sense. Now, I'm going to, in the second part of the show, I'm going to get more pragmatic and talk about some practical ideas about this. Right now, you know, anyone who's listening to the show knows that the first about 40 minutes or so, 39, 40 minutes, I'm chugging away just talking about concepts and getting people to think about things. And then we get down to some interesting and complicated ideas. And I want to bring in the concept of education at this point. One of our problems that I've noticed in the United States, but it's also prevalent elsewhere, is that governments have become proponents for and controllers of education. It's another kind of socialism, in a sense. And they oftentimes, desire of the government is to get people educated so that the economy of the country in a collective sense grows so that the government can grow. Now, that was never the idea of the founders of the United States. They wanted limited government, and they wanted the people to grow, and their relationship with God to grow. But they didn't want their relationship with the government to grow. They wanted government to become more and more limited in relationship to the amount of growth in all of the parts of society. Their idea was you needed less government, not more government, as other institutions in society develop, including educational ones. That's very different than today, I'm afraid. So education should not be a socialistic agenda by government, but it should be controlled and creatively so as a free enterprise with entrepreneurial spirit. Yes. So education that is quote-unquote public, and I know, you know, lots of people say, well, Jefferson was, you know, great proponent of freedom, but he also sought there to be public education. Yeah, public education makes sense because people need the potential to have the potential fulfilled for some level of the ability to create free enterprise and entrepreneurial spirit. That potential is given to them in free education up to a certain point. We usually say through high school these days, but it depends. Now, here's the point I'm trying to make, though. The education can be free in terms of cost monetarily, but it also, and most importantly, always has to be free in terms of the ability for someone to think within the educational system and to do as they choose to do in terms of how and what they learn and what they question and what they read. Very important. We'll talk more about that when we come back. So we're going to take a break for about 2.5 minutes. And when we come back, I'll talk about some more practical matters. I have an interesting story to talk about tonight and some other things. And so we will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com
or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and I hope that commercial wasn't too disturbing, and we're going to continue on now. Now, I stopped with the idea of education, and I think we should start there. That would be a good place to start. One of the problems about education is that it involves so much of what people usually consider to be knowledge, that they fail to understand or fail to think that it's really not about knowledge. There's a lot of knowledge around when you're talking to people about education and teaching them facts, which, by the way, change over time because usually the truth of today is not the truth of tomorrow as we gain better consciousness or understanding about everything around us. So knowledge seems like a almost, you know, given that it's part of and maybe the most important part of education, but it is not. The most important thing is to gain understanding or consciousness about the knowledge that you have so that you can use it in unique and new ways, and you can determine its validity at any particular time because some knowledge is just plain wrong some of the time, and you always need to question whether you believe something and have knowledge about something, or it's somebody else saying something, question it. Education should be about those questionings. Education makes us into entrepreneurs by helping us to question the status quo and to look for other better ways, new knowledge, new ways of being involved in free enterprise. So our educational system, as it is today, has become highly socialized. Worse than that, it has become programmed by people who, in general, have fairly high levels of egotism. Some of them are even arrogant, meaning they don't really care about what anyone else thinks. They believe their thoughts are right, and that's all they care about are their own thoughts. And so in these circumstances, the danger is that these folks who have control over textbooks and the education system are attempting to both politically and oftentimes, maybe worse, in thought, brainwash, control our youth. Children are impressionable. How you teach them, what you teach them is, you know, it's the foundation of who they are in part. I think family is more important. But that's another part of the show, and we'll get to that. But education is still scary when it isn't the parents that are so much involved in it, as it is people who don't have a clear sense of God in themselves, or they would be attempting to do what I'm going to suggest in a couple minutes, and it's instead run by people who are misusing, abusing the educational system for their own ends, which usually has to do with power and control. And that's scary. That's very dark, by the way. Now, I know that some people may disagree with me, and that's okay. I don't mind that being the case. Open-mindedness is important, and I'm open-minded. And if people disagree with me, I want to hear what their disagreements are and the rationale, because sometimes my rationales may be wrong. The important thing here is that there be open dialogue and open thought, and classrooms and textbooks should lead to that and not the opposite, which unfortunately more and more they do these days. So especially in some public schools, this is more true than not. The idea of public school was originally to not have doctrine. The only concept of doctrine was supposed to be the virtues as espoused by the founders, including those who are great lovers of Jefferson, Jeffersonian ideas, which included, by the way, God. Was an atheist. So, I mean, when you look at this situation, the concepts that were originally supposed to be part of public education have been driven out. And what's left in public education are the ravings and power struggles of those who are egotistical, arrogant, and seeking to abuse the system. That's somewhat true, by the way, of some administrators and teachers. Because not necessarily they want to do that, but the system has been designed to reward them if they do that. And in some cases, the system has been designed to push out teachers who are more open-minded and teach in ways that help children to think and become critical thinkers. That's a frightening thought. So, what do I suggest? I suggest a free enterprise and the entrepreneurial spirit be taught from the beginning of preschool on. I know that sounds crazy. A lot of people say, oh, come on, they don't teach that stuff till you get to college, and then they still usually are communists in college, so they don't teach that either. Well, that may be. That's what's wrong with the system now. I'm saying that children become much more responsible, much more loving, much closer to God in virtue if they learn free enterprise and how to be co-creative in businesses and be able to come up with ideas that they can promote that earn both money and produce valuable form kinds of things eventually, even if it's just an idea to begin with or an intellectual property these days is what we call some of the things that people create. But just imagine children doing this from the first day of school, even if the first day is in preschool. I know it sounds crazy, but why not? It is my suggestion, in a practical sense, that a school that incorporates some of this in its methodology would be one that creates highly virtuous and responsible children. I am not saying that should be the only thing they're taught. I like the Montessori idea of being very creative in other ways, too. It doesn't have to all be about an enterprise. It can be about just self-expression in some cases. with no form outcome. That's all right. Not everything has to be put in terms of that. The entrepreneurial spirit is still involved to some extent, even if it doesn't necessarily involve free enterprise or any enterprise. See, all this can live together. You don't have to exclude one thing for another. But almost exclusively these days, unless you're taking a specific course, like in business, much later in high school, school does not even have any applicable enterprise issues in it. Now, maybe that's a good thing, since it's so much controlled by people who want it to be a certain way anyway. However, I don't think it is in the long run. Socialism is bad not just in a business sense. It's bad in every sense. It doesn't treat us as individuals. It treats us as part of a collective, with the purpose being, rather than individually co-creating with God, that we're all co-creating for the sake of the government or party. Dangerous stuff. Terrible. Okay, I won't go too much further on the education business, but I just thought, as a practical side, we might want to think about some of that, because the changes could be done literally within weeks or months in a school system, especially if you're like here in Arizona, we have charter schools. And I'd love to see a charter school that, you know, says, hey, we're for free enterprise and entrepreneurial spirit. That's going to be a centerpiece in our program. It doesn't mean that's the only thing we're going to teach, but it is going to be part of it. Because I've seen some that are about music and about, you know, various parts of other expressions, and those are good things. But I haven't run across very much of free enterprise and entrepreneurial spirit, other than if they have a course in business. Like I said, in high school, you sometimes see that. But more often than not, that's a really college course. Isn't that frightening? Yeah, what's going on? And then what about traits? What about the concept of people learning skills with the work with their hands or use their hands in the various trades, etc.? Well, a trade to me is still just another means for somebody to be able to express their creative spirit. And they're still an entrepreneur if they do so with the freedom to express themselves. Now, someone that is working in a trade and everything they do is completely spelled out by some other authority, to me, that's not the entrepreneurial spirit. And that diminishes that person and the trade itself. Instead of the trade growing by the input, creative input of each person involved in it, it becomes stale and non-creative. And all the old ways are kept being redone without any improvement. And this also gets into things where governments regulate. Whenever they regulate, what they're really doing is they're restricting the development of enterprise. And they're restricting the entrepreneurial spirit. Now, sometimes some things are very, very dangerous for people to be around, and there needs to be somebody maybe watching. But regulation is different than just watching. Regulation says that everything that is done in a particular field or a particular institution is to be done exactly the same. That's what's wrong with regulation. It's not creative, therefore it's not God. God's not a regulator. And neither should we be regulators. We should be assistants. We should be people who watch And if we see something dangerous, bring it to the attention of those who are doing it with proposals of how they can reduce the problems they may be producing. And then that be a co-created effort between them and those that claim to be assisting. So I get rid of all the regulators and call them assisters. And I wouldn't give them absolute control or authority over anybody. That goes for the FDA, for those of you who know my feelings about the FDA. But it goes for a lot of other sources, too. It doesn't do us any good to completely control things like medicine. Do you realize that most of the sciences, most of you know I have a background in science. Most of the sciences are tripping, falling, and stifled because they are self-regulated, and then worse, they oftentimes are regulated by outside governmental offices. The AMA is a self-regulating, restricting body to prevent, really, the progressive development of new treatments. Because if you try to do anything, they'll come down on you. Then the FDA will come down on you because you might use something that isn't an approved drug or whatever. And eventually the whole thing is just terrifying. Some doctors resist that because they say, well, I'm supposed to have the freedom to do whatever I can to help cure my patient. And that's true of most states of the union here in the United States, that doctors have that kind of freedom, but they seldom exercise it because they're afraid of governmental reactions and bad ones. And they're also afraid of the AMA and other regulatory, self-regulatory parts of their field. It's kind of scary, isn't it? That it's going on, and we accept it. Everybody accepts it. It's okay. It's normal. That's all right. Is it? Is it really normal to do the thing that wasn't originally intended by God to do? We need to question everything boldly and to decide what is going to be the way we're going to choose to exist. The question why life is not just a kind of pat answer question. It's a creative question that continues to be answered indefinitely. Well, these are the kinds of things that I think we really do need to be concerned about. And whether or not there's a true practical example answer in the present society of the United States is debatable. I think we've lost so much freedom that it's almost impossible not to say we're overregulated in almost every way. I don't know of any way that we're not. And so free enterprise is being crushed by regulation, and so is the entrepreneurial spirit. And it's what's leading to a lot of the things that people claim are our economic problems. They're being created by these kinds of ideas that are part of the progressive movement, which has really came out of socialism, and part of the present administration, which is highly leaning towards socialism and communism. And so you've got progressivism, which is just a polite word for a much worse form of called Fabian socialism. And that type of socialism is extremely pervasive and destructive to everything that we hold usually dear and true in the U.S. system. All right, so at this point, I want to tell you a little story. I'm associated with a group of people who work together sometimes, oftentimes for spiritual purposes, as you know. And collectively, some of the vehicles are owned by some of the companies that are doing virtuous projects and stuff. A vehicle needed to be painted, and it's old. It's from 2001, and it was bought secondhand, so it wasn't exactly even bought new. And so it's 10 years old, and it was in a little fender bender kind of thing, which he fixed up. And then but it needed a paint job pretty bad. The Arizona Sun, it was a blue car. The paint just dissolves out here. It's really bad with the sun. And so we took the car in to a place because we called around, and we were interested in trying to find someone who was honest and virtuous in their business. And as you already know, we always try to seek to find people who are enterprising and entrepreneurs. That's one of the things we attempt to do. And you know from prior shows I've talked about this. So we found a place called Bodyline Automotive Refinishing, and it's in a town a little ways away from where I am. I'm in Tempe, Arizona, and this is in Apache Junction, Arizona. Technically in a different county, but really it's not that far away. And one of the things that I was impressed with, the owner of this shop, and I found out more today, I met his wife, and she's involved in their business, is that he started painting. He started becoming an automobile paint person. I'm sure there's a correct word for that. I don't have it in mind right now. Back when he was 16 years old. That was some time ago. I mean, he's a young fellow to me, but he's an adult guy, and he worked from just learning the ropes. Remember the knowledge thing? He gained some self-education in doing it, to eventually saying, I can contribute something better to this process. I want to have my own business. And so he became both an entrepreneur, and he involved himself in opening this Bodyline Automotive Refinishing place, he and his wife. His name is George. His wife's name is Shannon, and they are the Fernandez. And they painted this 10-year-old car. He also did a little repair on a bumper. Did a great job repairing that, too. And we picked out a color. It was kind of it's hard to describe it. It's like a red, but it has a lot of different tones of red in it. And it has a metallic, almost like a pearlescent, but it isn't a pearl finish. And it turned out to be just amazing. I can tell you that it looks better than a brand new car. And it looks like a paint job that you might see on like a custom-made car in an auto show or something. And he just did a great job. And he did it at a great price, too. And I believe that, he's worth all we paid for it, maybe a bit more. So the thing that amazes me is that he started in his business at the absolute worst time, 3 years ago. And they put everything they had on the line to go in his business because that's what people usually do. Not just all the time and all the money they had, but the very essence of starting something new, it's like giving birth. And unfortunately, most of you know what was going on 3 years ago. Yeah, we were headed into our bad, bad recession. And so they opened their business at the moment of a crisis. And they still prevailed. I believe so, because they're still in business. And I can tell you, I've been in his office, and he has people coming in there all the time wanting to have bids. And he has a lot of cars he's paying, and that's a good thing. Now, he can use more business. So if you are anywhere in the Phoenix area, even if you're on the west side, and he's all the way on the east side, I realize that, it's worth going over to this fellow's place. One of the things that I found interesting is he has this phrase on his card. I'll read it for you. Now, I didn't know this before this afternoon. Honesty matters more than success. I thought that was an interesting phrase. George and Shannon Fernandez, out in Apache Junction. If you want to give them a call, their number is 480-234-6366, or look them up over on the internet, Bodyline Auto Finish, big word, .com, BodylineAutoFinish.com. Now, I know that there's some people who are great friends of mine, et cetera, who would say, he's got to shorten that. Or nobody's going to remember it. But that's for another time. Maybe it's going to work for him. And I think, he's so good. BodylineAutoFinish.com, if you remember that, go to his website and check it out. And 480-234-6366. For anybody around town here that needs their vehicle painted. If you're coming to Phoenix, even for a vacation and or your winter visitor, or if you're here right now, you might want to consider going there as well. He's fast, he gets the job done, and he does an exceptional job of painting. I'm talking about an artistic level of painting. Rear for today. Okay, and another thing I wanted to mention is that we are still moving ahead, and a lot more people are trying and using and finding successfully that Phi Chi Jizek really works for them. So if you have some problems with whatever pain you might have, give Phi Chi Jizek a try. And remember, if you buy some, it's guaranteed. So it doesn't work, you get all your money back. You know, it doesn't cost you anything to try it. And, we also have free samples. So if you say, well, I really don't want to buy any, if you twist our arm, we'll give you a free sample. But you got to convince us you're really going to take it then. We have people giving our free samples to friends of relatives of friends of, and by the time, we have no clue whether it ever got taken or somebody, threw it in the trash bin. And unfortunately, these samples cost us a few dollars each time we give them away. So, only so much we can do about that. Okay, so Phi Chi Jizek is a tremendous product. I told you many times how well it works, along with all the other stuff we make. But this one is the new baby, and I think it's probably the one that more people can get some benefit from than anything else we've ever produced. You can go to buyjizek.com, and you can get the product there if you want to buy it. And if you want to contact us and talk to us about it, you can at 602-431-5762. 602-431-5762. buyjizek.com. Okay, enough of that. Let's get back to the question of how are we going to make ourselves into a greater level, we'll say, of entrepreneurial spirit, and also there being, at least in my mind, more free enterprise than there is today. And the answers seem to lie not with government, but against government. Now, I'm going to sound like a Tea Party guy now, although I'm not formally a member, but some of the points here need to be addressed. If we're going to have freedom and freedom of enterprise, we can't have a socialistic system. I know there's some things that people like about socialism. Social Security makes sense to a lot of people. And Social Security was the beginnings of how so- socialism kind of took things over. It's not such a bad thing because it's like insurance. People buy insurance and then they get paid back some level of it later on, sort of like an annuity insurance. But here's the problem, and this is the way I look at it. I don't think that it really makes a whole lot of sense for the government to be raiding all the money that we pay in Social Security and using it for all kinds of dumb ideas, when the better approach would be to teach people when they're young that they can invest in Social Security in dozens, hundreds, thousands of different ways, not just some, you know, structured way that you have to put in the stock market. I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think that people should be forced to have Social Security. I think they should be educated about having a plan for their future. And if it doesn't work out that they're going to live very long, well, maybe they can also make it a gift for others they in some way feel close to, or just maybe the general public. That kind of charity makes sense to me. And also, Social Security, as run by our present government, is an abomination of the original idea. All the money that's paid in is used by the government for some other purpose. So it makes no sense, to have an endless spigot running with money that the government can grow itself on. And that's how socialism has become developed in Social Security. Not because Social Security, as it was originally developed, was socialism, but because it gave the government power beyond its wildest dreams through things called entitlement. Every entitlement program builds the power of a socialistic state and goes against the free enterprise system. So entitlement programs, the danger, the real danger of entitlement programs is, even if they have the best understanding and purpose in mind, they should not be run by government. And some of them are worse than just having the best intentions. They have terrible intentions. If anybody's been reading up on Obamacare, it's just scary as all get out. It gives control over almost all of a person's life to the government. What you can eat, what you can drink, what kind of health care you're going to get or not get. These are terrible things. That's just one example. I don't want to belabor just things that may be politically in the news right now. I'm talking about this principle in general. Free enterprise can only happen in an environment of very limited government. If the government is not limited, there will be no free enterprise. So unlimited government extinguishes free enterprise. Unlimited government is called a dictatorship or tyrannical government. And it's unlimited. There's nothing to prevent it from doing whatever it wants. What limits our government in the United States is God, because our rights don't come from the government, they come from God. All the government is supposed to do is to ensure that other people aren't taking our rights away from us. But nowadays, the government takes most of the rights that are taken from us itself. A very dangerous thing. And what the founders of the United States were quite fearful of and tried to do everything they could to prevent. But they knew they couldn't stop it if we didn't choose to prevent it. So that's an important thing to consider. Let me move on. If we're going to be looking at this idea of entrepreneurial spirit, it needs to be part of the way that we relate to God. It should be part of our faiths, as they're represented by numerous different kinds throughout the world and in the United States for those who live here. So faith has to have freedom, or it doesn't promote free enterprise, and it doesn't provide or encourage entrepreneurial spirit. Faiths that don't do that generally become self-destructive, and they decrease or decline in those who participate in them. Faiths that do usually grow leaps and bounds and become stronger. It's an interesting idea, isn't it? So, and I can speak from, you know, looking around and studying different religions and seeing what the results are. So you can ask yourself this then, okay, how do we encourage then some of the faiths that are discouraging free enterprise to do the opposite? Well, any faith that involves social justice, that's just another word for socialism, is obviously going to want a collective form of economy and of enterprise, and there won't be any freedom in it. They'll be espousing socialistic or communistic viewpoints. Social justice, watch out for that word. It eliminates the individual from the equation. Now, there aren't that many in this country that are doing that, but some of them are. And if you belong to one, be aware that that's what's going on. Maybe you don't know, because a lot of people think that the word sounds benign. Social justice, what's wrong with that? So this is the problem. We're just not educated on what it really means, and we're being duped. The other thing that you want is you want to be part of a faith that encourages people to find and participate with God in all parts of their life, not just in coming to church on a certain day or certain days of the week. That's a big difference from one religion to another, and from the way it may be practiced in one particular church or synagogue or mosque than another. So being part of a faith that others are encouraging and encourage to be entrepreneurial is a good thing. What would be about that? Well, those members who come there would be in enterprise together. They would exchange goods and services among themselves. Some faiths do this. Some faiths promote this. Some do not. And it isn't just among themselves, that they would do it among all faiths that are doing the same thing. That would really be ecumenical and tremendously helpful in breaking down some of the barriers between faiths and making some of the radicalized faiths less radical. But you can only do it if the other side's willing to. See. If you're involved with people who believe that capitalism is a dirty word and free enterprise is a method to control people in terrible ways, or whatever, and it's only a way for the rich to get richer, well, that doesn't, you know, that's not going to be the faith that you're going to be able to, that particular version of it anyway, that you're going to be able to make a partnership of that sort with. It's also good to be charitable with those who are failing. But in your charity, don't just teach people how to eat. Teach them how to fish so they can go get their own fish. Help them in your charity to improve themselves and make themselves more self-sufficient by being more co-creative with God. Remember, you may not know exactly how, but you can assume that if they're having real problems in their creation, they have abused it at some point before, maybe even before this lifetime if you believe in prior lives. But regardless, they have had most likely some issue about that, so you need to help them overcome that. And that's an assumption you may not want to always say to people because they may be insulted or upset by it. But it's something to consider if you're trying to be of service to them. Not that they have to know it, but you need to know it if you're being charitable in helping them to overcome their weak creations or the levels of unsuccessful, destructive things they may have done. It's important to help them to gain their entrepreneurial spirit by first speaking with them about ideas and how and things that bring out in them the light of God. You can see it in people's faces. You can hear it in their voices. When you're doing it right, you'll know. That should be the main part of your charity. Not just say, well, here's some clothes and food. Have a nice day. I hope that makes sense to you. That's my suggestion anyway. What other pragmatic issues do we need to be looking at? Well, one of the things that concerns me these days is how and why we're using some elements of what we call technology. Now, I've always had some interest in new creative technologies that seem to help people to communicate better and to improve the level of light that is created through their uses. These are good things and not to be discounted. There's many technologies, though, that are abused. And sometimes they're abused on an individual level, which is a problem. And other times they're abused on a more globally propounded situation where you see people literally texting all the time while they're driving. I mean, it is a problem. There are some things that I think are really destructive. I think some of the video games that we give and even play with our children are not good for kids. Why not? Because they don't have structure in them that shows light. They're all about killing this, power that, everything else. Some of them are. Those are okay. Those are good video games. But most of them, I think, aren't. And so there's a whole realm of technologies that, in and of themselves, aren't good or bad. But the way we go about using them and the means employed produces a very dark shadow in our society. Now, I don't believe that children who play violent video games are going to become, you know, psychopathic murderers when they grow up. I do believe that some children who have psychopathic tendencies because of extreme abuse in this lifetime or prior one or whatever you want to believe, and who already have some bad problems, being exposed to those kinds of things, of types of video games that are the most insidious and terrible, that's a danger because it pushes them over the brink. It really is scary stuff. And there's no way to regulate this correctly. So you, remember I said that government should not be involved in regulation. It isn't about regulation. Parents shouldn't just say, you can't have that, you can't use that. Because the kid can go over next door and you won't know. They'll be doing it there. You can even play online. You can't be there all the time while he's online or she's online. And you can't block every site because new ones pop up every day. So what can you do? Education. Educate your children into light. Get some games that are enlightening. And have them compare the differences and talk to them about it. So don't avoid the bad ones. Educate them about them and say, look how terrible this is, and there's really no joy in it. It's just kind of a miserable thing. It really is. And so this is, I think, a very important area that we can help our kids become more entrepreneurial in spirit by not trying to gain things, which is what these games are about, through force and power. Even if the force is being exerted on them and they're just defending against it, that as long as the outcome is they win so many points or they get so much of this or that as the outcome of the game, that's not a good thing. You don't want to have all the lands and the castles and everything as your means of opportunity. Not for children, anyway. They need to recognize the value of their own creations and how creative have they become. And that's really what it's about. And recognizing that that co-creation helps to grow God in everybody else, and not just in themselves. So that's why I suggest education rather than saying, oh, don't do that, you can't watch that, you can't do it, because it's probably not going to work. And we certainly don't believe the government should be involved in it. And I don't believe schools should be involved in it either. Let's talk about the family now. I told you I was going to get to the family. Family structure also works best when it involves entrepreneurial spirit and free enterprise. Children shouldn't be handed out just anything they want. They should earn it, but not just by doing chores. Let them find the chores that need to be done and find more creative ways of doing it over time, so that it takes less of their time and energy, and it does a better job for everybody else. That's what you reward them for. And if you do that, that is a remarkable improvement. And if it's done with everyone in the family, including the adults in the family, doing exactly the same thing, you'll be amazed at how it changes the social dynamic. Putting everyone on an equal footing. Children are no longer continually feeling like they're being overparented, and parents don't feel as though they have to constantly force their children to do this or that because they didn't do this or that last week the right way. Because the children will become self-motivated, as well as the parents and other members of the family, might be grandparents, etc., who are all participating in free enterprise and entrepreneurial spirit in the family structure. Now, does that mean you charge somebody in your family for anything you do? No, not necessarily. But you may exchange services and recognize that each is giving to the other so they can be more creative, not so they can get something. It's the problem today is with getting things. We live in a two-material world, which is starting to crumble because in the next couple of years, the energy behind materialism in society is going to diminish. As that energy diminishes, another kind of energy is going to replace it. And so our senses are going to change and our values will change along with them. It's already started to, but we're going to notice the differences as time goes on. This is a more metaphysical understanding, but it has to do with more scientific interpretation of these issues. So our senses will change as the energies that each sense has, which is a specific kind of energy, becomes less dominant and another kind becomes more dominant. If you're already enlightened and practicing virtue in a disciplined way, these change in energies will have little or no effect on you. But for the people who aren't, it's going to have crises after crises effect on them. And some of them may act out and cause other problems besides. But it's the way that change is invoked into us through these unknown, by most people's consciousness of energies. Most people just not either aware or conscious these energies really exist. And maybe you don't believe them either. That's okay. I'm just suggesting that this is going to happen. Maybe you think it's going to happen for some other reason than what I just said. But, see, I follow the belief and call it understanding that God is a God in a form universe. It isn't just God in spirit only. It requires form most of the time for life to exist. And therefore, God is into things, but not things for the purpose of things. Things is a part of the whole package of creation. And the use of changing energies that are focused on the planet is one of the ways to help life to evolve or grow more quickly. Human beings don't have to respond only to the energies, though. We can become more aware of God itself and spirit and grow from that rather than be evolutionarily controlled by some kind of energy changes. Both is possible, and spiritual development is more desirable. Okay, so family structure is probably the central core of what really produces a virtuous or non-virtuous society. It's the core. And the important element to that core is that God needs to be present and a guiding light to the people in the family. God as they believe God is, not through any specific religion, not through any specific thing, other than what they think is specific for them. So if they say, well, this is the religion we really find God in, fine, that's great. But it needs to be really functioning within God and for God. Not that you're going to go out and kill everybody that isn't part of your religion. That's not God. That's definitely not God. And free enterprise and entrepreneurial spirit can also be shared by the adults to the children in how they bring money into the family. And everybody can participate in how they can do that more effectively and more efficiently, no matter how that money is being earned, either through businesses or working for others or whatever. It should be something that the whole family shares in. Instead of falling on, well, it's the man in the house that has to figure all that out. That's a bunch of nonsense. First of all, women are sometimes earning more money than men these days, and besides which, they're working as often. So it's everybody should be involved in it and bring the children into it so they can participate. Then you're having true free enterprise in your own family, and you're building the entrepreneurial spirit through everybody sharing it together. Now, I'm not suggesting that this is the only thing you do. I'm just saying add it in there into your repertoire of helping to parent and helping to educate and helping to strengthen the family. And believe me, it needs it. Schools are not much help if they're public schools because most of them are indoctrinated with socialistic ideas to some extent, some worse than others. As you may know, if you've been following the news, Texas threw out most of those ideas out of their textbooks this year. But they were in there for a couple of decades. So don't think that just because Texas is some free-thinking state or something that it can't really go awry. I mean, decades they had these books. It was staunchly communistic and socialistic ideas in them. Crazy stuff. And many times anti-religious and anti-God ideas. Now, I believe people should have the right to be atheists, by the way. But atheists should, in my opinion, I encourage them to try living as though there is a God and compare that to the opposite and see which way works for them better. Why not try a practical experiment? You got to give it months. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to do it for 24 hours and experiment. Now, this has to be minimum months. It may be longer, but at least months. Make a reasonable period of time, 6 months, and do an experiment and see what happens. That seems worthwhile to me. Maybe you think it's radical, but I don't think so. But others may choose to think that. All right, so let's talk about another area where free enterprise and the entrepreneurial spirit become sometimes challenged, and that's in the arts. A lot of people pursue artistic endeavors because they want to be creative, but they also don't want, they think, to be involved in a business with it because they think it stifles their creativity. And this has been, I think, a misnomer. I think it's good when you're being creative to not be necessarily during the moment of creation or moments of creation, that you're not putting whether it's going to sell or not as your first and most important idea. I'm not even sure it's good to entertain the idea at all for some people. However, that doesn't rule out that after you've been creative, you can't take accounting of all the things you've created. If you're a great artist of any kind, I don't care if you're a writer, a sculptor, a musician, it makes no difference. And you look and say, what among and what about I have created could be part of an enterprise in exchange of form for either money or for some other goods and services. That's worthwhile, and that employs the entrepreneurial spirit then. And then it also will mean that as an artist, a person will be able to support themselves without having to have their hand out for government support, which is really a hidden form of charity, but it comes through a socialistic process again. Rather, or just plain charity from people because they're failing to do what I suggest. So you don't have to, at the time that you're writing the greatest symphony in the world, be saying, well, I wonder if people are going to really listen to this. Maybe I should change this phrase here so that more people will buy this music or this record or whatever, or this disc. No, that's not what I'm saying. I think that would be folly. And people who do that may not be artists, by the way. But rather, once you've done the creation, what's the best way to sell it or to exchange it with others? And what ones are more successful for that purpose and which ones are not? That's not so hard to do, and that makes a lot more sense. Now, again, I've known so many people in the field of art that would tremendously disagree with me about this very concept. They would say, you don't know what you're talking about because you got to be a pure artist. You can't be concerned about any of that stuff. And just wrecking what real art is. Well, if real art isn't for the benefit of others, then real art isn't godly art. And if real art is for the benefit of others, You can't just give it to them. They need to exchange with you, because this whole idea of enterprise is based upon both parties giving to the other what they need. They are the ones that produce the economy through exchange, not through some kind of fraudulently based thought system of who should or should not get what, and that there should be social justice so everybody has what they want and everything they need. Well, that's just crazy. Things are best when they are created and when they're worked in creation for. So you can't just create something. You need to then develop it and work to exchange it with others in a free enterprise. These concepts are difficult for some people because we have changed a lot of this in our society, and it's not being taught in education or schools, so people are confused. They think it's their right, somewhere to be found in the Constitution, to have clothing and food and shelter and maybe other things like televisions and telephones and who knows, on and on. We don't have such rights. We have the potential. We have the right to exercise in potential form. Our self-created needs and wants being met. We create these. Now, we don't create the fact that we need to eat and drink. But what foods we eat and drink and when and how often and how much, we do all that stuff ourselves. So that's important to recognize. This is all part of our self-expression. And we don't want to have that taken away by anything that isn't free, of course, freely expressed. Okay, so let's talk about what happens when somebody lives their life using the examples that I have presented today. Now, there's a lot more that we could go into, but I'm going to curtail that part because in order to finish the show when I want to end up, what happens if you do all these things in all these areas and many, many more? What will happen to you? What will happen to most people, almost everybody that does these things? Well, the first thing is you're going to become more self-reliant, more self-sufficient. You're going to have more self, not just a lower self, which is the part of us that we recognize only deals with ourselves, but a higher self as well. You begin to have such prosperity, because this breeds prosperity, that things no longer become so important to you. Rather, the giving of things may be more important than getting things. And further, helping others to develop the same kind of entrepreneurial spirit may be more important than anything about things in almost all circumstances. So you become a non-materialist. It's weird, isn't it? We're talking about through free enterprise and entrepreneurial spirit, a person becomes far more spiritual and far less materialistic. That doesn't mean they don't live for and have some forms of material things, because we are material in existence at this time. But still, we are becoming more spiritual rather than more material by following the ideas that I have presented in tonight's show and a lot more besides. What else does it do? It causes an expression of love by the exchange through freedom and creativity. People grow tremendously through this kind of inclusiveness and love. And the growth is not just in being more creative now. It's in being more inclusive, recognizing that while you're an individual and you're thriving as an individual, you're also living so that others can improve themselves as well in a similar way, but in their own way. Not as a collective mass under some dictator of the government, but as individuals, each is growing, and you are helping all to grow, one for all and all for one. It's a great idea. So that's part of what we can anticipate as being the results, the consequences of following some of the ideas I'm suggesting. Does it explain why life is? Yeah, if you get into it, you're going to discover God everywhere, in my opinion. But I would like you to find that out for yourself. And if you find that you have been duped and haven't been following this, not because you wanted to, but you just didn't know better, and you were thinking one thing was good that isn't necessarily good, then this will also be a liberating point. Liberation from darkness, particularly when we've been duped, is a tremendous change. It provides a whole different paradigm for people to live their lives by. And it's a good thing, and you can do it in a short time. Implementing these ideas in our lives can be done in a few weeks. Now, I'm saying implementing. I'm not talking about reaching fruition. It's like they talked about George and Shannon. They've been working on this business for 3 years now, and they're probably just at the point where they can sometimes say, maybe we can pay the bill this week, right? Or maybe we can expect that we're going to have business in a month or two from now. Because when you first start out, you don't know that's going to happen, and sometimes it doesn't. And also, and let me talk about this, failure. Every time you're creative, you're taking a risk that you're going to fail. And it's almost certain that the more creative you are, the more failures you're going to have. It's almost a certainty. It's just like the sun comes up and, you know, goes down. It's going to happen. But failure is not really failure. Failure just means that your ability to co-create was not high enough to reach the complexity and difficulty of the form you were trying to eventually interact with and exchange with others. You just didn't match the two. Some people have great big ideas, but they can't get down to the details necessary, and they don't maybe have some skills, and they don't ask for the help that's needed to be able to do what's necessary to have a great enterprise. And so in those cases, they may work for other people to learn it, and they may also ask for the help of other people to gain it. There's nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, most people, when they first start off, work for others because they don't have the skill set. They don't even have the awareness necessary to be successful. And they're better off waiting and learning by doing. Now, I'm not saying that they should be slave labor and sitting in a production line where they learn almost nothing. Now, I'm talking about a different kind of job than that. I'm talking about a job where you do have skills and other things that are developed in the process. And try, if you don't have a job like that, try looking for one that is, that you can do. Because those other jobs are dead ends. They don't provide the ability for a person to get away from the job and get into their own creative enterprise, be it a business or something else. So if you have that option at all, then get away. Some people have some serious financial issues in their life. be a problem for them. We make choices all the time. It's okay to make choices when you say, I need a lot of money to pay off this or to do that. It's okay to make a choice to make money. But it's better when that choice to make money is being driven by a creative light and co-creation with God of some bigger part of yourself. And the money then becomes a secondary factor, or third, or fourth, or fifth. Because if you run your life only by money, then you will not find any satisfaction or joy in your creations. Because money in itself is not a reward for creation. The reward for creation is in service to other people. And what you create is enjoyed and used by other people, not the money. Money is just compressed time and energy. It is not a creative element. No matter how much money you throw at something, if you're not creative, and especially if you're not creating in light, the money goes for naught. Governments do that all the time. Because they believe the opposite. They think money is the real important issue. They're very wrong, obviously. So don't live your life for money, because that's not going to get you to what we're talking about in tonight's show. And make sure that your children and their friends, if possible, don't fall into that belief. They won't, as long as you aren't living that way. Money is the only thing that you're concerned with. You aren't living an entrepreneurial spirit, and you're not going to have free enterprise in your life. Instead, you'll be controlled by a system that stamps out free enterprise and makes people into slaves to money. Is it okay to be rich? Is it okay to make a real lot of money if you're entrepreneurial in your spirit and you employ free enterprise? It's not only okay, you should, because money is compressed time and energy. And as you become more and more creative, you should save both. You should expend less time and less energy through your creative efforts. And that doesn't mean it doesn't take a tremendous amount of time and energy in the creative stage. But once you achieve what you're creating, and it takes much less. If it's a creation that is enlightening or is enlightened. I hope you understand that last part. I don't really have time to explain all the reasons why that's true, but it's a good thing for you to think about, maybe do a little thought experiment why that would be true, what I just said. We could talk about it another time. I've given some reasons for it in prior shows, but if you're a new listener, you may not know those. But then again, you know you can go to the archives, and we've got ours back up again. GoDaddy, maybe they heard what I said about them last week, got ours up in less time than they said it was going to take. So we're back in business, and you can go ahead and listen to hundreds and hundreds of these shows at our site. That doesn't cost anything. Or if you want to spend a few dollars, you can do it through the radio station. They get theirs up first. We usually don't get ours up until days to a week later. And that it supports this radio station too. So it's worthwhile to do that. It's a worthwhile thing to do. Well, we are out of time for right now. So, I just hope that this show has made some difference in your life. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.